What's up, everybody, and welcome back into the Sorry to Interrupt podcast. This is part one of another combo pod, Tom. We've been getting pretty damn good at these. Will and I are going to talk Stanley Cup playoffs a little later on, but for tonight, on Monday night, we're talking hoops. How we doing, sir?
I'm doing well. Yeah, you're going to be hearing from everybody a lot this week, possibly you and Will more this weekend, as it is the beautiful Princess Michaela's birthday weekend. So I may be MIA, but I'll still be watching, and you guys will be good to go. I might be on the recap, so maybe I'll only miss Saturday.
Listen, we'll hold down the fort if by any chance. Listen, certain priorities matter a little bit more, and I would say that your beautiful fiance's birthday weekend is a little bit more important right now.
Even if this was our only job and we did this for a living, Saturday would still be out.
1,000%.
No matter what.
That is a non-negotiable conversation, and rightfully so. But yeah, man, let's get into it. So we are recapping some NBA playoffs. We're down into kind of where I would say the tipping points of a lot of series are at. We're talking Monday night at almost 8 o'clock Eastern, where the Celtics right now are up by 5 on the shorthanded Cavaliers. But that's not where I want to start. I want to start in Indiana, where the Knicks, listen, they got sucker punched yesterday. We alluded to it on the Monday rundown. If you haven't heard that, it was a great opportunity for everybody who is a Knicks fan to spend time with their moms, because that game was not a game at any point. But Tom, how are we feeling? It's 2-2. They're heading back to the Garden for tomorrow night, game 5. You know the place is going to be rocking. It might come already after a Rangers series win. But where are you with the state of the Knicks and all the injuries and just kind of where your mind is at as we head to game 5 tied at 2?
I still feel really good about this team just because of all the injuries and whatnot. And if Indiana's going to go out there and play like that, then the Knicks are going to lose, because that's not the Knicks game. They want to muck it up and make every game like the first series and every game basically up until then, outside of that game where Embiid completely went off in the Philly series. But if the Pacers aren't going to continue to be able to play like that, they played their version of their perfect game, they're not going to be able to do that against the Knicks defense, so I'm not too worried about it.
I like the confidence. You know, game 3, I thought, was really a game that could have gone either way. It felt like if that game was at the Garden, the Knicks would have won. If it was in Indiana, Indiana needed it. Carlisle bitching and moaning.
It just felt like the Knicks were due to lose one of those games. It felt like they got too many of them in a row.
For whatever effect that Carlisle had on the 78 calls and the grievances with the way that the game was officiated and the comments about how we would just like a shot as a small market team, I think worked, because there were a lot of questionable calls in game 3, man.
There definitely were, and I respect the hell out of Carlisle, so there's not much argument there out of me working the refs, but you definitely saw it reflected in game 3 and a little bit in game 4 with the amount of free throws and the whistles that were being blown, as opposed to the rest of the Knicks games where it kind of felt like we were at Rucker Park a little bit, which I love.
Oh, how could you not? I mean, the way that I'm looking at this series right now is the Knicks have the home court advantage. You know, if it goes 7, they get 2 games at home, and that's really important. But the Knicks are just so shorthanded, man. And I don't know, with the volume of minutes that Hart has to play, the guy says all the right things. Brunson is banged up, fortunately not on the injury report for tomorrow, so he's expected to go. You got Precious. I mean, all of these guys are just getting beaten, battered, and bruised. And I felt like game 4, actually, I want to get your thoughts on this, probably was a perfect situation for the Knicks. And what I mean by that is you actually were able to give all your main guys a break, because the game was never close. You could throw up the white flag, the towel, whatever you want to use. And I think the most important thing is even though it came in as an ass whooping, the series is still tied 2-2. You're going back to your place, and you were able to get your guys off their damn feet for once.
Yeah, I agree with you. We are tied 2-2. We're going back to our place. And again, I'm just trying to stay optimistic here, because I could come on here and scream that the sky is falling, but you've already chronicled the Knicks' injury problems. I mean, just look at Precious's minutes. All you have to say throughout the series is that.
I mean, Hart. Like, the guy literally doesn't.
Well, I was
come
just showing Precious's minutes because it's like that tells the story of the series and the playoffs so far, where they've gone up progressively, and it's not because he's playing out of his mind better. It's just because we've gotten so hurt that we need him.
Yeah, I mean, your other option is Jericho Sims, which they don't want to do, and I'm totally in favor of that. But, I mean, you had a short rotation anyway in terms of guys that Tibbs trusted, and Alec Burks actually had to play a lot the last couple of days. Made some shots in Game 3, actually. You know, he's never shy about shooting.
No, I'm just hoping that he can shake the rust off at this point. We're just grasping at straws. We're so hurt, and maybe he can play above the level that he's been playing at since the last time he was a Knick.
He would never be getting a chance anyway, or in any other way, but you could get a great moment from him. Like, that would be so cool if tomorrow night he hits a couple big threes late just simply because he was forced into playing because of all the injuries that the Knicks have sustained. I'm still taking the Knicks, but I think the series is going 7. I think you got to win it in the Garden, because going back to Indiana in Game 6, that's a tough place to play.
I agree with you. I think the Knicks are going to figure out a way. I mean, we can't sustain one. If one more guy gets hurt, it's over. But
Brunson was limping around with a foot the other day, I was like, oh, you've got to be shitting me.
Yeah, then
like,
the season's basically just over, and you say it was a great run, and let's get healthy for next year, which is kind of Ernie where I'm at. I don't know if you can tell on my voice, but
I can.
I think we could still eke out this series in 7 as long as no one else gets hurt, and then we'll eventually just lose to the Celtics, who are going to win this Cleveland series despite a couple of really good performances from Mitchell and crew.
Yeah, now Mitchell's not playing because it came out like an hour before tonight's game that he's suffering a left calf strain and is not playing. So it's just I cannot ever recall an easier path for a team to get to where they ultimately want to be.
No, I mean, they're not going to, but if they lost this series, or really if they lose the next series versus the Knicks and or the Pacers, I mean, we'd be talking about this as an all-time collapse. Then they'd have to talk about blowing it up in Boston, and Missoula's already gone if that happens.
I think what has now happened is whether they play with, you know, stress or not, or they say we don't have to have anything to prove, I don't care what they say. The body language is going to be important to follow. There's no way that you can talk yourselves into losing to whether it be the Knicks or the Pacers. No chance. These are not teams that you should have any issue with if you're the Celtics, with or without Porzingis. And I know I'm talking about this right now as the Celtics are only up 3 in the second quarter of Game 4 of their series. But if Donovan Mitchell's not playing, I'm sorry, Cleveland. It's been nice to know you, but they're not going to be long for this series. I think it's 5 games anyway. We said that after Game 2.
Yep. No, yeah, especially with Mitchell being gone, I don't think Garland and Mobley and Cass can step up enough to beat this Celtics team. So Celtics in 5, and then you just got to hope that this Knicks series goes 7 so you can get Porzingis healthy, if you're rooting for them, which I'm not.
We've seen some really good Mitchell moments in this playoffs, and I think it's important
to remind
to talk
everybody.
About, yeah, and I think that's what it is he's not one of the top 5 players in the league, but he's somebody who, again, on the big stage, you're excited to see that if you're a fan of a team that might be able to go get him, whether it be Brooklyn, whether it be Miami, like there's a reason why he was in Knicks rumors for so long. He kind of has that moxie of going off, even though, again, you said that his days of having really any defensive identity are completely gone.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, am I the only one still holding out hope for him to be that plus defender? I don't know, but yeah, I'm glad he reminded everybody as to why he's probably, I don't know, top 10 scorer you'd want in the league.
You would want him because there's not a lot of players outside of the alpha superstars that are capable of having some of the performances that he has in the playoffs.
Mitchell is who the Phoenix Suns and who everybody wants Bradley Beal to be every year.
That's a good comp. I like that.
Pretty
much. You're on your comp game today, bro.
I'm trying. I got another comp for you if you want to talk Nuggets real quick.
Of course. I don't want to talk it quick, but yeah, let's go.
I think the Nuggets, I think this year they're gonna take the series. As much as I went recency bias in 7, I think it's gonna be a knockdown drag out. And they're gonna be the Detroit Pistons, and then next year LeBron's gonna find his way over to the East. LeBron's our magic character in this situation, and I'm thinking the T-Wolves are going to face the Sixers, Miami, whoever LeBron decides to go to, and surprise us with a finals win next year. LeBron will be magic in that scenario of the Lakers, and Minnesota will be that team in red in that scenario, and they're winning the title next year.
Okay, there was a lot there. Holy shit.
Yeah, I comp the Nuggets to the Pistons.
Going to the East, maybe going back to Miami.
I comp the Nuggets to the Pistons. I comp LeBron to Magic. And then you know who I comped Edwards to. This is a 92 comp.
And you're making some comments about LeBron maybe going back to Miami. Like, was that calculated, or are you just throwing that out there?
I'm just looking at teams that are going to have a little something and that LeBron's going to keep his eye on as, you know, maybe next year he goes to Philly or Miami or somewhere in the East and they just have a magical run through the East. Maybe the Celtics blow it up for whatever reason. And we're all looking at LeBron like they were back in the day looking at that Lakers team. And then you have this Minnesota team on the other side and they just go out and take it and they're off to the races.
All right. I want to chronicle all of this. I think that's...
So that's my long-term prediction for the T-Wolves and Edwards jumping off point of his career even further.
Well, I fucking love that. And for this series, as we head into it now, I mean, there's so many twists and turns. We have had the visiting team win all four games. Minnesota did, I thought, a pretty admirable job in game four last night. But, you know, again, you get reminded of why it's so hard to wrap your mind around what happened to Denver in game two. Because they're still, I think, the best team in the league. Jokic is still the best player, no matter how incredible Ant has been. And you're just like, how did that happen? But also, how about the resiliency of Denver, and particularly Murray, who shouldn't have even played in Game 3. He should have been suspended. That was bullshit job by Adam Silver. That most players, especially in when it comes to referees and protecting referees, players are going to get suspended for at least one game for throwing something at them. So I don't know why he wasn't suspended, but that gave Denver a huge break, dude, because he's been awesome in games 3 and 4. And now they're going back to Denver where if they win game 5, I think they win it in 6.
Wow, that's strong. I mean, I'd have to see what Edwards and the gangs have to say for that. I think for me, it was just the extra players or whatnot. Your McDaniels and Alexander Walker's just came back to earth a little bit there, Kyle Anderson's and whatnot, and we need those guys to be dogs again if Minnesota's going to have any chance in this series. But I do have to say, amazing job. They got double punched in the mouth there in the first two games, and they showed why they're the champs, and like you said, Joker showed why he's the best player on the planet. I'm just happy that they put up a fight, because if they laid down and got swept, I'd have to do some real reevaluating of where that team stands.
Oh, everybody would have to think about what Denver would be. And it's crazy, when we did the pod on Friday, you know, we were talking about what does game 3 look like. This is going to be an interesting test. I guaranteed that Minnesota was going to get one at home. So the fact that they didn't really was surprising to me. They got blitzed in game 3. And then, like I said, game 4, I mean, Murray hit that big half-court shot at the end of the first half, screaming at Kevin Harlan. That was pretty dope. But you also had an Aaron Gordon performance, and he was amazing in this game. At one point, he was 9 of 9 shooting. And, yeah, this is a guy who, again, him and Porter, they're both capable of being the second best player on that team on certain nights. And that's why, again, it's just so crazy to see what happened to them in game 2.
And yeah, absolutely. I mean, no doubt about it. I think we can just chalk that up as they were not ready. I mean, what else can you say?
I don't know how they weren't ready at home, already down 0-1. But again, this is why series are so fascinating in this sport, because one dominant performance or terrible performance on either side is going to do what you say all the time, is recency bias. You can only go based off of what you saw. And after the first two games, it was really hard to believe that we were going to see Denver pick their shit back up and go into Minnesota, where the Wolves have a great home court advantage there. But I think I would say this: Towns, for as great as he was in game 2, not really all that good in games 3 and 4. And if you get some bad Towns games and the body language sucks and he starts moping around and he's taking some ill-advised shots, that could really undo the Wolves' chance to win, no matter how great Ant could be.
Yeah, and that's why he is the ultimate second banana. And it's going to be interesting to see if Ant can get him locked back in, because he seems to hold the keys to the Carl Anthony Towns vehicle. So if he can get him playing that way, I just, we haven't seen much from KCP And Porter had a terrible game in the past game. So, I mean, if they regress to the mean and Denver plays the way the rest of the team should be playing, then it's going to be a lot of trouble for Minnesota.
Who wins game five Tuesday night?
Denver.
By the time people hear this, you know, the game might already is probably already going to be over. So I'm going Denver.
Yeah.
I think Denver wins in six. Yeah.
Okay. I don't even know. I don't even want to make predictions anymore because I'm wrong every time with the recency bias. I'll go back to Denver. Now that they've showed me, I'm going to stick with Denver.
It's just...
I'm a flip-flopping motherfucker in this series, though. Like,
it's amazing how you do it. It's amazing how you do it.
I'm
right,
calling
last
myself
series.
Out on it, so...
You are. Let's move into the Dallas-OKC series, where the Mavs are up 2-1, which I think is surprising after seeing how game one went. But game four is tonight. That's Monday night. And again, I don't know how many times that we have to say it, dude. Watching what Kyrie Irving is doing right now and seeing how much fun it is for him on the basketball court, whether he's being the ball distributor, whether he's being the number one option, whether he's shooting, whether he's taking the ball to the basket, he's trying on defense. But to me, this series has been about PJ Washington and what he's done, because I think they're down 0-3, even with that great Luka performance, if PJ Washington hasn't been what he's been. And he's been absolutely incredible, too.
I agree with you. I mean, there's defensively, and then he's just hitting every shot every time he touches the ball. There's really nothing much you can say there. I mean, this team, you know what you're going to get. We've said it a million times. Last game, 31-10 and 6 out of SGA. I mean, you can pencil him in for whatever the hell you want. His numbers are going to be great. It's Chet and it's Giddy. Like, they're just – Chet had a very mediocre game, in my opinion. You guys aren't going to win the series unless Chet plays, like, the rookie of the year runner-up, possible rookie of the year.
He had 7 blocks the other night, pretty nuts.
He did, but I mean, 13.
But you're talking
and 8.
About offensively.
Oh, yes, exactly. 13-8 is just not going to cut it. Like, we need you double digit rebounds in the playoffs. You need to be going to get every ball off the rim, and we need you to have at least 18-20.
Luka's
just been a sieve.
No, he's awful. He's gotten to the point where you basically can't play him, and you're going to have to get more out of, like, an Isaiah Joe or a Dort.
Yeah, or what's his face? Can't. Wiggins or something.
Yeah, I mean, shit, maybe even Gordon Hayward, for God's sakes. Like, you're
going to have to try something different.
You're going to have to try something different. And this is a moment now where, again, this is game four. This is in Dallas. If OKC loses this game, they're still a young team. I think because they were the one seed, we believe that they should be able to come back from down 3-1 or face adversity. None of these guys have really ever been here before. So Dallas is the much more proven team. Obviously, we know Kyrie, his histrionics, and obviously Luka's heroics in a lot of series. But you also got guys like Tim Hardaway Jr., who's used to making some big shots at times, right? So I think today's a pivotal game in this series. I think if Dallas gets it, I think Dallas, you're looking at to win it in 5 or 6. If OKC gets it, all bets are off heading back to OKC tied.
Yeah, I think if OKC wins it and Chet has a big game, then maybe it goes 7. But if not, like you said, Dallas is going to wrap it up pretty easily.
You also might need SGA to have like an all-time.
Yeah,
SGA.
31. We might have to bump that to 45.
Yep. Yeah. You know, how do you see this series going? What's your prediction as of right now before game four?
I just think that the Thunder are going to end up kicking themselves that they didn't make a bigger move than going out and getting Gordon Hayward, that they didn't go out and get a big man to kind of protect Chet in the rebounding category or whatnot. So I think the Mavericks are going to go out and take it, and then we're going to see some off-season into trade deadline activity out of OKC, and maybe they'll start unloading that war chest of assets that they have.
Oh, they have so many moves that they can make. I think that that's a foregone conclusion that they're going to really shake up this roster. And yeah, I think they've been kicking themselves really ever since the deadline. I don't know why they didn't go out and get Gafford. Doesn't make any sense to me. Any more thoughts on these series? You want to wrap it up with a little draft lottery talk?
No, I'm really enjoying these series. The Minnesota has taken the playoffs to another level. I'm having a lot of fun. I'm just hoping the Knicks can win the next game and take control of this series. But yeah, the Hawks got the number one overall pick, and unequivocally, according to all experts, the worst draft in since I don't even know when.
It's so weird because, first of all, they did the draft lottery on a Sunday, which they've never done. It was always a Tuesday or Wednesday or something. I didn't even know it was happening.
Yeah, I didn't know until I saw the notes. I really don't think they care about the draft this year.
And then you got the Hawks who had, like, they were in the play-in. So, or just missed the play-in, right? So, like, this is not, like, the worst team. How can you do worse than Washington? Like, Washington getting the third pick is just, oh, what a kick in the balls that has to be for that team that intentionally sucked. Again, wondering why, because there's no elite prospect. I'm not even going to try to guess who's going number one or guess why.
Castle, baby.
I think it's going to be one of the French guys. I think it's going to go one. But I'll ask you this. If you're the Hawks, do you use this pick to try to maybe make a splash and move off of Trey? Or
I was thinking that, but I mean, really.
You just use this pick.
I think we got to just wait a little bit longer for the combine and whatnot, because like we said, the draft doesn't matter, but we need to find out if there's any gems here to see what this pick is even worth.
Yeah. I also wonder, too, if it's going to be one of those things where if it is valued, like Russillo was talking about it with Simmons last night on the pod, and Russillo was saying he was talking to executives that said the first pick in this year's draft is being looked at like the eighth pick in a lot of other drafts. And maybe as bad as like a pick in the 12 to 15 range, like back end of the lottery. If that's what's being talked about in league circles and everybody knows it and it's the worst kept secret, to me, I think you just keep the pick. Like, don't trade it for nothing. Like, and why would another team go up and now have the responsibility of making the one number one overall
pick? It's such a tough position to be in because it's like, it's the number one pick and this is the year where it's like, do we get cute and try and find another Giannis? But you're never going to find another Giannis, so do you go best player available? But how good could that player be? It's just, I don't even want to be in that position. I kind of would root to have the third pick.
I think you're 100% right. And that's this. I think this draft from an appeal standpoint to the general fan has basically nothing. You know, obviously I'm going to be looking at my UConn boys and seeing where they go. But ultimately, this is where scouting is going to probably play a bigger role because you can't miss on somebody like a Wemby. You can't miss on guys like Paolo. Like, maybe they don't pan out, but no one's going to look back and be like, how the hell did you pick that guy? I think in this draft, like you said, it would be better to have the third or fourth or fifth pick because it's like, listen, I don't really want to take anybody, but this is just the cards that were dealt. So scouting's probably going to have to play a major role sifting through the prospects here.
Yeah, listen, whoever's got the best scouting department is going to win this draft. So, I mean, maybe the Knicks trade up for cheap and we go and get Castle.
I know you. Well, shit, man. If Castle played for the Knicks, oof.
I'd be over the moon if we could put him next to Trey, and then we go out and we get, you know, our score slasher three. Ugh.
Wait, put him next to Trey?
Brunson, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I'm bad with names. Well, we're talking Hawks.
Are you getting Trae Young?
I don't want Trae Young. Let's just put that on the record now.
Why would you?
It was
Why
a lapse.
Would you?
It wasn't even a lapse. It was a mistake. I misspoke. I said the wrong name.
Is there one GM that would rather have Trae Young than Jalen Brunson?
No. No. Never.
No chance.
No, I said the guy's wrong name. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not asking. Don't take it so seriously. You got that? That's all right. What I'm saying is Trae Young is like, he's considered a star, right? Like, for his flaws, you would still say he's a star.
I guess, yeah, in the public eye, he is. In my eyes, he's an empty calories guy. But sure, in the eyes of the NBA, he is a star.
Would you ever have thought 2 years ago or even a year ago that if you had a chance to get Trae Young, but you had Jalen Brunson, that not only would you say no, but you would laugh in the face of the person that possibly proposed Trae Young being better than Brunson? It just goes to show the ascension.
But I also think you could do a hell of a lot, do that with a lot of the league.
Yeah, I mean, depending on how you view Brunson, of whether he's a true point guard, whether you want to play him off the ball. I mean, I think Kyrie's put him back in the conversation where, and this is crazy too, because Kyrie's been so good, but it's like, I'm not talking about contracts because obviously that's very different. But if you would just have to have one player for a playoff series, like based off what Brunson's done in the clutch this year, I think I would still take Brunson over Kyrie. And that's fucking crazy.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. That is crazy to say. I don't think if you put Brunson back on the Mavericks currently constituted the way he's playing now and switch him out, I think the Mavericks are either the same or a little better.
It's so wild to think about what Brunson's done.
No doubt. No doubt
Because you
about
look
it.
at the players that might get traded this offseason, and you know, there's some names for sure that have had good careers or are all stars. But the way that Brunson's playing right now, I mean, he's not old. This is his team. He's doing it on the biggest stage. He's playing through injuries. He makes his teammates better. He's a winning player through and through, and he's got the stats to back it up. He's not just one of these New York gritty guys. You put him in any situation, and your team's in a really good spot.
Well, that's why it's the best signing in the history of the NBA. It really is. I
it's
mean,
the it's the best. It's definitely one of the best in recent memory for sure.
if you want to talk about like LeBron or whatnot, I mean, those are easy. Those are max player, but non-max player, you can't tell me a better free agent signing.
Crazy to think that's almost 2 years ago, and we had people asking if they overpaid for him.
Crazy to think, man. All right, well, you're gonna have some hockey with Will. We're recording this on a Monday as the Yorktown douchebags are probably in the middle of their game. I'm hoping that they can get themselves to 3-0, and I'm hoping Willie has a big night and contributes. We're gonna have to hear about it tomorrow, so you have to ask.
Of course, I'll ask. That's going to be how we're leading off. I don't need his expert hockey opinions. I need him to give me a breakdown and a recap of the Yorktown douchebags. Hopefully, another victory.
Hopefully, man. All right, well, everybody, we hope you enjoyed this one, and on to hockey.
We'll be back with part two right after this. Part two of the pod. Thanks to the CEO for talking some NBA, and now Will, another week, another hockey pod. The Stanley Cup playoffs round two is really heating up, but buddy, I think the CEO has blessed this. We're going to be going this through the Stanley Cup Finals. How we doing, sir?
I couldn't be more happy that the CEO lets us talk about hockey. I love some hockey, and you know, every time we talk about it, you know more and more, and it makes me so happy to hear it. But going back to the CEO's pod and your pod, just one question for you. We'll do it on this. Do the Knicks get the job done tonight?
Yeah. So right now, I mean, let's pull it up. Everybody knows that when they
They're
hear.
up 15 at halftime.
All right, so there you go. I think we both predicted they would win game five. So I'm going to say, yeah, I don't have a reason to say no.
Love that. Does the NBA do the same thing as hockey where it's 2-2, 1-1, 1-1?
Yes.
Okay, so that's perfect. So then you go back to the Garden to close it out. So,
Yeah, and win game six.
and we'll talk about that in hockey too as we start with the Canes and the Rangers going to game four there. You know, we talked about it. The Canes were down 3-0. They made it 3-1. They had one of those games where they went up and the Rangers fought back. It was that was one of the best games of the Stanley Cup playoffs, in my opinion. They came out buzzing in game four. They saved their season. Brady Shea had the game winner on the power play. Carolina's power play has been absolutely horrendous in this series. They were like 0 for 13 at one point, where the Rangers were like 4 for 9. And that was the difference in this series, minus Igor Shesterkin, who's still one of the best players on ice all the time and for both of these teams. They win that game four, and you say to yourself, okay, gentlemen, sweep, here it comes. And then we get to game five, Sean, and you're back in the Garden. Garden's loud, it's pumped. You know, they put Rempe on the ice just to get the crowd going. He barely played in game four. And the Rangers just did not show up whatsoever. They had the early one goal lead on Trouba on a shorthand goal. And you say to yourself, with how the Rangers have played this whole playoffs, they score that one goal and you're like, oh God, here we go. If you're an opposing fan, you're like, here we go again. But then the Rangers did something I haven't seen them do since like the regular season in a back-to-back. they just dumped and changed. And like they said, you know what, we're going to rely on the best goalie in the playoffs right now, and Igor Shesterkin. And came to the third period, and Igor needed some help, and he did not get it.
To me, is obviously from the outside looking in here and relying on your expertise, what I took from game four, if you're a Ranger fan, was you actually had to leave that game feeling really encouraged because they battled back. They got themselves back into it. And listen, they didn't win, but Carolina was a really damn good team all year. It would have been really hard to sweep them. So you go back to the Garden, game five, where the Rangers are great at home. And really, to me, the effort just wasn't there. They kind of just laid down. And that's easy for me to say. You know, I'm listening to analysis this morning and prepping for this section of the pod. And you could see it on the ice, though, even from a super casual observer like myself. It seemed like they were very comfortable playing, to your point. It was like Trouba scored the one goal, and it's like, okay, let's just play it this way. And all that aggression, all of that, you know, really tough play that you saw and spirited effort coming back in game four just never came back. I mean, they got punked. They lose. They lost 4-1. And Carolina just, they're not ready to go home yet, and they're too good. And now they get to go back to Raleigh, where I know the Rangers beat them in the game seven 2 years ago, but that was 2 years ago. And Carolina's awesome at home. They're not awesome on the road. If the Rangers lose this game, all bets are off in game seven, because now you're talking Yankees Red Sox territory. I think it's only been done, what, four times in the NHL playoffs. So that's my takeaway so far from it. Just really disappointing if you're a Ranger fan last night. And now you got to be, I mean, what's your panic level? Let's play the game on a scale of 1 to 10. How are you thinking if you're a Ranger fan?
To be honest with you, if it's me, I'm not a Ranger fan, but if it's me, I would say probably 7, to be honest with you, because Carolina is one of the best home teams in Stanley Cup playoffs in the last, I would say, 5-6 years. They just don't lose at home, and obviously the Rangers stole a game from them there. But this, in my mind, is going to go 7, and that's, in my opinion, puts all the pressure on the Rangers, because everybody saw this series. You're a Rangers fan, you're a casual, you're a Carolina Hurricanes fan. You're like, all right, we're going to get swept. And then before you know it, it's 3-2. They win on Thursday night. It's 3-3. Every single pressure you can ever have in professional sports is on the Rangers. And the best thing, if you're a Carolina Hurricanes player or even a fan of that team, you get to play free and easy. We are down 3-0 to the President Cup Trophy winners, the best team in the NHL. And now we're here in game seven after being down 3-0. It's just, I can't see the Rangers losing the series, to be honest. They're a better team than in Carolina. But the whole way they played in that last game, where they scored that first goal and they dumped the puck, changed, played the neutral zone game, had no effective shots on net, minus maybe 2 or 3 shots on Frederik Andersen, who also played well, but only faced like 26 shots. It wasn't like he had a big volume of shots that came his way in game five. And the defensive lapses in that third period, either it was Trocheck or Panarin not getting there on the back check, and it was a quick pass through the slot and an empty open net goal. None of those goals, maybe the first one from Staal, but none of those goals were Shesterkin's fault. Your defense just let you down. And, you know, you can't move that fast laterally to the other side of the net when the puck's passed across at 50 miles an hour. You're not going to save that. It doesn't matter who you are. It's just one of those things that the Rangers just like, yeah, we're going to relay on this guy, and hopefully we get the job done. And it burned them. And you have to go into Carolina, and you have to, in my opinion, if you're the Rangers, you have to take a 3-0 lead in the first into the second period. If you don't, if it's a tie game, this is all favors Carolina.
So, two things there. One, I love how you detailed even further why the Rangers were just – that change in philosophy just doesn't make any sense. Just keep the foot to the gas pedal. I don't know why they played so conservative there. And, you know, Laviolette in his post game, you know, he was just oozing anger and frustration at the way his team came out and played, and how they kind of just laid down once Carolina answered them. The other thing too that I think you brought up was a really good point. I kind of want to touch again on the mindset of the athletes, right? And particularly when you look at the Stanley Cup playoffs, they're so different than the NBA playoffs. I think they're probably most comparable to baseball, because if you got a hot goaltender, or you get a hot pitching staff, or you get one hitter who gets in the zone, you can kind of win. And the NBA, usually, almost always, the best player and the best team win. But 2 years ago, when the Rangers won Game 7 in Carolina, they were the underdog. Everybody expected Carolina. That was a Ranger team under Ole Vigneault that nobody really expected to be there yet, right? So when you get there, you're playing with all the pressure on Carolina. I can't remember. Were they the President's Trophy winner that year? I can't recall, but they were really, really good. And obviously the favorite in that series, and the Rangers were able to go in because Carolina was playing with this immense amount of pressure on them. And the Rangers didn't have that at all. Now it's completely flipped. They get to go home and say, yeah, we're the home team and maybe we're favored in this game, but we're coming back from 3-0. Every single goal we score, every single, you know, time that Anderson stands on his head, it's going to be, are the Rangers going to get tight? Are the Rangers starting to see this slip away? And that's going to be something that's worth really paying attention to. I agree with you. I think the Rangers got to score early and then keep it going, or else if Carolina gets a little bit of momentum, we're going back to the Garden where anything's up for grabs, like I said.
Absolutely. And the most frustrating thing, if you're a Ranger fan, in these last two games, and even the game you won, you've been absolutely atrocious on the power play when it was lethal in the first 2 to 2.5 games of this series, where you were 4-for-11 at one point, which is unheard of on a power play, and you're 0-for-your-last-11, but you do have a shorthanded goal. Like, that's the difference. And we talked last pod, the pod before that, about hockey, is teams take these dumb penalties against the Rangers and the Rangers burn them for it. But lately, it's been the Rangers, they're having bad puck entries into the zone. They're making a bad pass back up to the point where there's nobody covering there, or the puck is bouncing and it rolls all the way down the ice. It happened a couple times last night in the game against Carolina, when it was a 2-1 game, Carolina, after they scored 2 goals in about 3 minutes. But after they scored that third goal, they scored 3 goals in about 6 minutes and 50 seconds or whatever it was. It was just the Rangers just kind of called it in. They just called it in, said, hey, you know what? We'll get ready for the next game in Carolina. But like, if you're a Rangers fan, you're the best team in hockey. You're just going to give up. You know, Frederik Andersen has had his bad moments in this series.
Like, you have everything in your advantage.
Exactly. And Frederik Andersen has had bad moments in this series where he's let up a couple of cheapies, as I want to say. And he's also played very well as well, so I can't take that away from him. But he's let up some cheapies. So you're down 3-1. Let's say you win a faceoff. You chuck the puck down the ice. You win the boards battle. You find Panarin in front, and it's 3-2 with 5 minutes left. That's a ball game. But the Rangers just, like, put their heads down, and it was just the whole body language. I was watching the game, and everybody has their hands on their hips or whatever. And you listen to all the post games. Trocheck and Zibanejad said the same thing. Like, come third period, they just wanted it more than we did.
I hate when athletes say that. They think it's the right thing to say, or coaches or managers think it's the right thing to say. It's not. How the fuck – you can say one thing. You can say, listen, we got our asses kicked. I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but you kind of teed me up for it because I fucking –
yeah, 100%.
It's like you can say, listen, they had the fresher legs. Hey, listen, they played with – they had a little bit more edge to them because they know the season's ending. We wanted to just get to – or stick to our game plan. There's so many other ways to word it. But you can't question – you shouldn't be able to question effort. And even if I look at it and say – you know, I look at baseball all the time. It's like when teams go through hitting slumps, I'm like – people say, oh, it looks like they don't care. It's like, no, it's just they're not hitting. They're not scoring runs. It's contagious. In any other sport, it's like you always look like you're not trying when you're losing because you're professional athletes. You're the best at what you do. But to say that the other team wanted it more, that's such a character assassination, an indictment on not only your teammates, but yourself. Like, what the fuck? I hate when people say it, dude. I can't stand it.
Yeah, and like the only post-game conference that I respected as a former athlete. Also, throw this in there real quick.
Douchebags. We need a douchebags update.
Douchebags are 4-0. We won 14-0 the other night. We're 4-0. We might run the table. We might get the job done. That's just a side tangent. But the only the post-game conference that I respected was Shesterkin. Shesterkin has stood on his head this whole series, whole NHL playoffs. He gives up 4 goals. I would say, to be honest with you, three of them were not his fault because the defense had lapsing judgments on a slot pass to the other side, where you have to make a ridiculous glove save on a top shelf shot to make the save, which is, it does not happen in hockey. And he goes, I should have played better. Like, this is the guy that is being relied on because the Rangers are like, all right, we're up 1-0. We have Igor. But this is the only guy that said, this is my fault. I need to play better. You need to play better, dude. If it wasn't for you, the Rangers probably, this game is probably maybe 3-2 Carolina with one bad bounce going the other way in overtime.
I think that's a really good point. This series has been a lot closer, and you know, the Rangers win the double OT game in game two. They stave them off in game three. You're right. The series could be very different. I feel like only games one and games five were the definitive games for either team. I'm fascinated to see what happens Thursday night in Raleigh. I'm fascinated to see how Laviolette has his guys ready to go. If the Rangers play with that same attitude and tenacity that they played with all season to get the President's Cup trophy. Because again, you know, you said it on the last pod, and I think it's true, and you kind of saw it last night. When the Garden's rocking and it's game seven, I think of that Pittsburgh series 2 years ago. I think of a lot of other occasions too. But then I also remember game seven in 2015 against Tampa when they lost. And it can become a church. It was really quiet in there last night. They were not able to get up for the moment. And the Rangers didn't really give them a reason to, so it's hard to get mad at the fans on that one. But
also game seven last year against the Devils. I'm pretty sure they were up 3-1 against the Devils last year, and they blew it.
Yeah, I know they were up 2-0 for sure. I remember, I know that well. Anyway, anything else on this series? I guess I'll tee you up and ask you point blank. Did the Rangers win game six? You hinted earlier, you say the Rangers are probably still going to win. Did the Rangers win game six in Carolina, or are we talking about a game seven on a Saturday night in May at the Garden?
I think the Rangers lose in overtime on Thursday night, and then they go to the Garden and they get it done. And I think it's going to be that Rangers team that we saw in the first three games. And it's going to be 3-1 in the third. And they don't have that many shots on net, but they have those quality scoring chances that they score the goals. Carolina's going to take a couple bad penalties in those times. And the Rangers get back to that power play. And I think they win 3-2 in game seven to go on to the Eastern Conference Finals.
Not only are you giving us outcomes, you're giving us scores as well. God damn, you're good, sir. All right. Let's talk about the other series in the East, which just saw game five end. Boston, they stave off elimination. They go down into Florida, and they beat the Panthers 2-1. There's been a lot of chippiness in this series. You're going to have to detail that a lot better because I certainly can't. So talk to me about what the flow of this series has been since we recorded last week.
So the Panthers got embarrassed in game one on home ice, and it kind of kicked their ass right there. And they were like, we're better than this team. And it showed in the next two games where they just absolutely dominated them. I think it was 6-2 or 6-3 and then 5-1 or whatever. And then they had that big come from behind game in game four where they were down 2-0 the whole game. And they scored three goals in the third period to win 3-2. And as you stated earlier, Sean, that after we talked about the Rangers, this game would just end. And the Bruins just stole one in Florida.
Are we pros, man?
What's up?
Are we pros or are we pros?
Well, I mean, just definitely pros. You called it perfectly. As soon as we were done talking about the Rangers, that game went final. And the Bruins stole that one to make it 3-2. And that's another thing. Now they have to go back to Boston. So it might be another one of those series that we talk about with the Rangers. But the Panthers have been, in my opinion, the better team in this series. The last three games, minus this one, where Jeremy Swayman looked pretty good. He was giving up almost four goals a game in those three series that he was getting killed. And they stuck with him, and it ended up working tonight. And obviously got to stick with him in game six as well. The Stars are coming to play for Florida. You know, you look at all your first line and second line guys. You have Bennett, Reinhardt. I feel like they either score every goal or they assist on every goal. Obviously, what I said, the Bruins are riding Swayman. And it was the most impressive thing about this game is one of your best players was missing with an upper body injury in Brad Marchand, who got it looked like a cross check to me in the middle of the midsection in the back. that was not called, but should have been a penalty, and he was down on the ice for a while, and he had to rest that injury tonight. So winning with him out him tonight is very impressive.
Is he day-to-day, or is he out for the series?
No, he's day-to-day. Okay. But that's the other thing, and I relate it back to Carolina. You know, the Bruins, after winning the first one, and you say to yourself, oh, it's great. You know, Florida, in my opinion, Florida's the better team. Then you get spanked twice in a row from Florida, and you're like, ah, shit, this team's good. And then you take a 2-0 lead in game four, and if Florida come back and beat you, you know, the Bruins, if you're a Bruins fan, you're like, ah, we're fucking done. And then you come out with this, you come out in this game on the road in Florida, which is a tough place to play, and you win 2-1 where Swayman stands on his head. You had no Marchand. And now you get to go back to Boston. Hopefully you get Marchand back. And now, like we said before, the pressure is no longer on the Bruins. The pressure is on the Florida Panthers. Because if they lose this game, obviously they've got to win game seven back in Florida. Just like the Rangers, if they lose that game in Carolina, they got to win the game back in New York. So all these pressures are on the underdogs of this series. I mean, the favorites of the series. So it's crazy hockey, and I couldn't be more excited to watch these games.
It's really fascinating, even from somebody like me, who's obviously not as well versed as somebody like yourself. And I think what you ask for a competitive series, and you're asking for storylines. You got the chippiness, and listen, I'll say this about Marchand: he doesn't have a kick coming with his history either. If that was a penalty, I think. Listen, sometimes karma's a bitch. With Florida, I mean, this Florida-Boston rivalry over the last year has been fascinating. Obviously, we saw what Florida did to them last year because they were down 3-1, right, and came back and won. If Boston was able to do that as the underdog this year, that's just amazing storyline right there. And also, too, I'll say this. I think, in hockey, it's amazing how much the momentum can shift from game to game. Unless it's the NBA Finals or like, and the two teams are so close, you don't really see it. I mean, like, you can't really have more momentum than what the Timberwolves had going into coming back home, doing what they did to Denver in Denver, and then losing two straight. And now it's like, oh, well, those results might have not even happened because Denver's going to now beat them in six. So in hockey, it really is such a constant ping pong back and forth, game to game. I think it's riveting, and this is why the Stanley Cup playoffs are the best, right?
Absolutely. And you look at these games, and if you just look at the box score and you see like teams that win games like 3-2 and they had like 19 shots compared to like 52 or 42, whatever you want to say, it's not the shots that matter. It's the scoring chances that matter. Because on those 19 shots, like the Rangers in game three, I believe, they got outshot. Like, oh, that's when Igor had 54 saves on he had 54 saves or 51 saves on 54 shots, which is one of the most ridiculous things you will hear. And Frederik Andersen on the other side had 24 saves on 28 shots. So it was the Rangers had the better scoring opportunities, where the Carolina Hurricanes were just, I say Carolina Panthers, like they're good at something.
We're talking Carolina. We're talking Panthers.
Yeah. Carolina Panthers. I got the Florida Panthers and the Carolina Panthers confused. Like Carolina was good at something in football. My fault. But what I'm saying is, all that matters in the NHL is scoring chances, not shots on goal. Scoring chances. When you see a team leading, and it showed on the big board in that game where Shesterkin had 51 saves. The Rangers had 7 more scoring chances than Carolina because they had the better scoring opportunities to put the puck in the net, not just chucking a shot from the blue line, hoping for a tip, and it doesn't happen. It goes right into Igor's chest. Those are easy saves for him when he can see the puck from the blue line right into his chest. So it's more about the scoring chances in the NHL playoffs than the shots on net. You can have 70 shots on goal and score 3 goals, but the other team can have 25 shots and score 4 goals because they have better 2-on-1s, breakaways, whatever you want to say. And it's an easier goal than trying to get a tip with a guy that's 6'6" standing in front of you, and you get your 5'9", 5'10", trying to get your stick right on the puck to just tip it past the goaltender.
Also at a point, too, great analysis, by the way. Phenomenal breakdown. Learning a lot from you, buddy. I also, too, is at this point, as these series continue to go on, there's no secrets anymore. Everybody knows what these teams are going to do to each other and what their advantages are and what their disadvantages are. So that's kind of what I love, too, as series progress in the playoffs, is it's really like there's no real strategy anymore. It's let's fucking go. Let's give me your best against my best and winner takes all. It's really fun because every team has, at this point, as the series go on, we're going to talk about the West, every team has used their best game plan, right? Now you throw them out the window and you get to work.
Yeah, and like unlike, I would say, you know, baseball's probably the most comparative to it because like you said earlier, you get a hot pitcher, you win a game in the playoffs. Like you don't really see sweeps in the NHL because obviously you can have a goaltender that's not on his game. You get a trickle shot that goes in. You lose a game in the series. You end up winning 4-1 or whatever. You don't see that in other sports. Like, you look at baseball. You get a guy that throws 7 innings who has a 4 ERA all year because, God forbid, he got beat up by a couple teams. But then he goes to the playoffs and throws a 2-hit shutout through 7 innings, and the team that's the 1 seed loses. Sean, we've seen a lot of that as Yankee fans.
You also see the reverse, right? You get a Kershaw who might be the most dominant pitcher of his generation, and you have an advantage every time he takes the ball, but he goes into the playoffs and gets rocked, and it becomes a thing.
Exactly. It's just like hockey's one of those things. Like, you could be the last seed to get in the playoffs by a game, and look at the Florida Panthers last year. Barely made the playoffs. Get to the Stanley Cup Finals. It's just getting on those runs. That's all that matters in the NHL. You get a goaltender that stands on his head. You need to score 2 to win games, and that's what you do. It's not like any other sport where, you know, a guy can score 60 and still lose a game in the NBA.
It happens. It happens almost all the time. So, yeah. Right. I mean, Anthony Edwards had another phenomenal game on Sunday night, and they lost pretty easily. Yeah. So, yeah, it happens for sure. Hockey's completely different. I think we've spent a lot of good moments here on the East. How are you seeing this series finish up, buddy?
I think the Panthers take the next game in Boston. I think they really do. They got shut down by Swayman tonight, but Swayman has his issues in goal. I think the Panthers get it back because they've been averaging almost four goals a game this playoffs, and they only put up 1 this game, but I think they come out buzzing in game six, and they take care of business, and maybe they get a little bit of rest. Maybe it's not. Maybe the Rangers win. They both win in 6, and that would be a hell of an Eastern Conference Finals if both those teams face each other. So we'll see how that goes. But on to the West, my Dallas Stars. Let me fucking tell you. So the only thing about the Stars is, in my opinion, they're the most complete team in the NHL right now. And obviously the Rangers won the President's Cup trophy and were the best team in the NHL this year. But what this team does offensively and defensively, the defensive scoring from this team is unlike any other I've seen. You can bring up the Avalanche too with Cal Makar, obviously, and that's who they're playing. But with Miro Heiskanen, one of their top line defender. He has 6 goals in the playoffs. A defender has 6 goals in the playoffs. That is something ridiculous to hear. But also on the Colorado side, and we talked about it earlier, we need to score 6 to win games because Georgiev has his up and downs. That's what happens. But the big thing, and I don't know if you saw the Twitter, ESPN or whatever, they lost their best goal scorer in the playoffs right now, Valeri Nichushkin. For 6 months. He got suspended for 6 months without playing.
Yeah, that's some crazy shit.
Yeah. So he was in a rehab program. I don't know all the details. I think it has to do with painkillers and all that stuff. I think it's a drug issue, is my guess. And once you void the program, you get highly affected from that in a suspension standpoint. Because I think they, unlike baseball, if you do PEDs, you miss half the season. They kind of put you in this program, like a rehab kind of thing. And like, you know, cause hockey is one of those sports where there's no load management, as we've talked about before. So they kind of see that these guys probably take painkillers, all this stuff, and they put them in this rehab program. It's not a thing. But once you abuse that, you're getting hurt for it big time. And it couldn't hurt the Avalanche anymore in this series with taking out their best player at this, not the best player on the team, but this best player at this current point in this playoffs.
Yeah, that's a wild story. But your stars are backing you up, man. They've listened to you. They're very happy with you. Continue to back them. And they're making you look really, really smart. I think that you got to give them the ultimate compliment for that. And if it takes a little help from Colorado, you're going to take it, right?
Absolutely. And obviously Wyatt Johnson has been unbelievable too for them. I think he has 7 goals in the playoffs. But as we talked about in the last pod, Jacob Duncan, the Walrus Ottinger, has been unbelievable. He's been unbelievable. We talk all of this stuff about Shesterkin. He's been better. He's been better in this playoffs the whole time. And the Stars are a legit problem. And they're looking at the next series. Like, obviously, you have to play the juggernaut of the offense of the Oilers if they get there, or the solid play of the Canucks as we transition into that series as well, with a goaltender who had 9 career starts going into this playoffs, who is dominating right now and is looking at some big money in the offseason. So that's going to be a fun series to talk about. Sean, let me get your take. Is Edmonton's offense going to beat the solid play of Vancouver, or is this young kid that has 9 career starts just going to keep standing on his head for them?
You know, I'm such a novice with this. Is McDavid playing? Because
I'm so glad you said that. I am so glad you said that.
You mentioned the cross check, or you know, that wasn't called in the Marchand situation. This was a dirty fucking hit.
He got cross checked in the face.
What is the situation with the NHL? Because McDavid, I don't know if he is the number one face of the league, but he's, I know, the best player. So if you're having this, like, what are the penalties that we're gonna see come down on Vancouver? Because if he's out for any amount of time, listen, we see that the Oilers are up 2-1. Game 4 is tonight. As we're talking right now, it's scoreless almost halfway through the first period. I'm going to return serve the question to you. I'm going to just say it's going to depend on McDavid. Obviously, McDavid and Draisaitl, they've gone far in the playoffs. The lack of goaltending and defense scares me. But when you score like that, you can win on any night. But just kind of walk me through everything I just articulated out there and give me your thoughts on the entire cross-check.
So, I mean, you get cross-checked right in the numbers. Granted, that's a penalty right there. It wasn't even called. And then you turn around to talk to the guy and you cross-checked in the mouth. Like, what are the refs not paying attention to the game? Like, I think the NHL offices have to look at that and suspend the Canucks play. I forgot who it was, but have to suspend it for at least one game.
Also looked really intentional, too.
Yeah, it was definitely intentional. Obviously, you try to hurt the best player in hockey, in my opinion. But also, I couldn't appreciate you more for what you said. Is he even playing? He has 2 goals in this playoffs. Like, you're the best player in hockey, and you have 2 goals in this playoffs. Obviously, you had your scoring chances and whatever. They don't go. But this Oilers team goes when you go. And this series could be 3-0 right now if it wasn't for Zach Hyman. Zach Hyman in the slot might be one of the best players in hockey this year. His eye-hand coordination on tip shots is unheard of. Just you getting this, what is it, a 6-inch shaft of a stick on a puck that bounces straight down through a goalie's leg. Like, I it's just amazing to see him. Draisaitl, as you mentioned, has been playing very well. And even the second-line center and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins has been playing very well. But you alluded to it well. It's you know, it all comes down to Skinner and goal. I mean, he's had his ups and downs. He's not even a top 10 goalie, in my opinion, in the NHL. And
to get to where they want to be.
Yeah, exactly. But also, it comes down to, like, I think it's more of a mental thing for Edmonton, who is probably averaging maybe close to 4.5 goals this season, the regular season. And they're playing a guy that has 9 career games going into these playoffs, and he's just been unbelievable, saving everything in Sivos. And it's just something to watch. And to be honest with you, I think it's a more of a mental game, not a skill game for Edmonton. I think they lose this series, to be honest.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, listen, we're going to have to see how it all plays out. They're capable of dominating in the game any night. But this McDavid thing is really fascinating. These series have been really – you got one in the East. You got one here in the West. And as these games continue to advance, I mean, obviously we're going to see what happens tonight, right? But we are in game five in there, and the Canucks are either going to go up 3-1 or the Oilers are going to return serve, and we're going to go to game five tied up. So
yeah, and it's the craziest thing. And you said it yourself. You ride the hot hand. You know, DeSmith has been back for the last two games, and they're still riding with this kid because this is who they win with. And that's what you have to do in the NHL playoffs. You saw it with, Tuukka Rask for the Bruins when he was in his second year. After a bad rookie season, their starting goalie got hurt, and Tuukka Rask had one of the best playoffs in goal of all time.
Is that the Blackhawks series?
Yes, that is the Blackhawks series. And he had and that's what earned him, why everybody knows the name Tuukka Rask now, is because of what he did in that playoffs. You just got to ride the hot hand and stick with it. You know, if Sivos gives up five goals tonight, then yeah, maybe go back to Casey DeSmith. Obviously, that's what you're going to do because this guy's, like I said before, has played minimal time in the NHL. So obviously, then you maybe make a change. You know, you make it 2-2, and then if DeSmith shits the bed, yeah, go back to him, and then hopefully you can ride the offense of JT Miller and Elias Pettersson and even Luke Hughes coming up on defense. But that I think that series too, if the Canucks take a 3-1 lead tonight, I think it's over. I think it's completely over. There's no chance of seven there. Like I said, mental game for Edmonton, and the Canucks are just in their head, and they're getting away with a lot of chippy shit, which I don't think they should. But as Tom would say, if you're not cheating, you're not trying.
We know how he feels about cheaters.
He loves cheaters. He loves cheaters. As long as you don't get caught, he loves cheaters.
Exactly. Yeah.
Big Bruce Pearl guy.
Oh, the biggest Bruce Pearl fan. Big Slick Rick fan.
Big Slick Rick fan.
And rightfully so for his Johnnies. Will, a lot of great hockey analysis, bro. Awesome job here. Really fun getting to chop it up with you. Are there any final thoughts? Is there anything that you're looking for from any of these four series, more so than others that we've talked about, that, you know, by the next time we get on the mics and talk Stanley Cup playoffs, that you're either going to feel conviction in, or that you're going to look back and say, probably shouldn't have made that point? Because Tom and I do it seemingly every single pod. We feel like idiots when we talk next.
Yeah, the only thing I have to think about, and it comes to two teams, and it's the two teams that are favored in the East to play each other in the Eastern Conference Finals, and that's the Panthers and that's the Rangers. If they both have a 3-1 lead and they both lose, you got to think about massive changes throughout the coaching organization, major players there. Because, you know, I make the joke.
One and done in New York if they lose?
I mean, you won the President's Cup trophy, so I don't see one and done. I do not see that. But, you know, I've been listening to a lot of New York sports radio. Dave Rothenberg, even Rick DiPietro said it. If we don't win the Stanley Cup, it's a disappointment. So what's a disappointment of losing in the second round? There has to be changes made.
Well, with a 3-0 lead.
Yeah, there has to be changes made. But like, that's the thing too. And, you know, every team does it, and you saw it work with the Warriors. You saw it work with the Heat in the NBA. You saw it work with the Rams winning the Super Bowl, trying to buy championships, but it does not work all the time. It does not work all the time. But you know, the Rangers are too good to fall in this series. In my opinion, it's not the Rangers team of last year. But it wouldn't surprise me if they, to be honest with you, it would not surprise me if they get shit on by Florida. But at the same time, it would not surprise me if they won, you know, in five games against Florida either. It just depends on what Rangers teams show up. And we talk about that in every single sporting aspect. What Knicks team is going to show up today? What Cowboys team is going to show up today? What Giants team is going to show up today when they were good, Sean, no offense. But
I like how you had to throw that in there. Just because you're happy with your Cowboys doesn't mean that I don't.
Yeah, I mean, also, you know, you just.
By the way, quick update here. Edmonton's up 1-0. They've just scored just under seven minutes to go in the first. And then for Tom's Knicks, because obviously he is probably sitting down right now thinking, oh, we're going to win the series. They're up 103-86 with 8:18 in the fourth.
I mean, it's just they were only favored by 1.5 tonight. So if he took that, it looks pretty good right about now. But also, I think you got to be at some point, if you're the Knicks, And I know you guys talked about it and I listened to it as well. When you play seven players, listen, if I'm the Knicks right now, I don't mind winning 113-110 if Brunson can get some rest and Hart can get some rest and DiVincenzo can get some rest. As long as you win the game, that's what matters for the Knicks.
Said in game four, the best – or game – yeah, game four, the best thing that happened to them was the fact that that game was never close and they actually –
absolutely.
Tibbs had to rest his guys. So we'll see. I mean, listen, there's going to be either a lot of heartbreak or a lot of more happy days to come here for the faithful at MSG. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, well, I have one more question for you before we go. Does OG come back next game, or are we resting him for the conference finals?
I mean, that hamstring, I don't think he can play. I don't think it's if he could play, he'd play now. I don't think that hamstring's getting better anytime soon. It looked bad when it happened, and how hamstrings are. Those things last fucking forever. So I think we're probably going to have to get on this pod. Listen, we got a lot of golf to talk. Tomorrow we're doing the roundtable preview of the PGA Championship. We're going to be doing round-by-round recaps, hopefully joined by the CEO as frequently as he can.
Yeah.
And still, there is a chance that after we get off the mics with some of these PGA championship recaps, you and I just keep going and we talk about some probably very eventful round two decision-making games.
Absolutely. And I have two words for the CEO, Michael Block.
We'll get into that tomorrow, everybody.
Can't wait,
thanks
boys.
For listening. Will, great job with the analysis. Everybody, hope you enjoyed the two-part pod. We're busy boys this week. We'll be back soon.
Johnny.